My name is Beck, the co-host of the Not Super Woman podcast. I acknowledge we meet on the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, who are the traditional custodians of this place we now call Sydney. We recognise the cultural heritage, beliefs and traditional custodians' relationship with this land. Welcome to this week's episode of Not Super Woman. This has been a part of our Sydney Adventure series where we came up to Sydney for Fashion Week and we got to speak to the very busy but incredibly entrepreneurial, clever,
fun.
Yes.
Just divine. Like I was kind of sitting there looking at her and I'm like, God, you're gorgeous.
Yeah, well, flawless. Very put together. Taryn Williams. It's hard to actually give her one label because she is so
accomplished.
Yeah, so busy, so many things on her career path. I mean, she is a CEO and an entrepreneur of multiple businesses. She started Wink Models, a modelling agency, when she was 21. She went on and founded The Right Fit, which was connecting brands with creators, and then also the influencer agency, and then she sold both those businesses and then went on to thrown herself into Hash Gifted, which is, connecting influencers with brands and working like an app and a service that sort of clarifies the contra-gifting marketing, I guess, for influencers, which is quite a fascinating thing in a world that Zoe and I have no idea about.
No idea. And it was just, I actually loved chatting to her about who Taryn is behind that.
Well, that's right. I mean, we were sort of looking at her. She is so well presented. She speaks so eloquently. She is so accomplished. And we were just like, how does a woman cope with all of that and have time for herself, time for a relationship, and a personal life? And Taryn was very open and honest in talking to us about the fact that whilst she has been incredibly driven in her career, she realises that she hasn't afforded much time for her personal life, and that, you know, it was very refreshing for her to share these hindsights because it's sort of just that reminder that you do have to recalibrate and you have to look at what's going on around you to be able to figure out where the balance is.
Yeah, and what your next steps are, which I loved hearing about hers. And we can't wait to bring this interview to you.
Yes, so welcome to Taryn. Welcome to this week's episode of Not Super Woman, and we are incredibly grateful to be sitting down with the very busy and very clever CEO and entrepreneur Taryn Williams. Thank you so much.
And very tired.
But you don't look tired. Oh, you look very fresh.
Thank you. Picture of, I feel like, we've grabbed you in a window while we're in our Sydney venture, which is so exciting. And it's wonderful to be able to sit down and talk to you because we've listened to you across so many podcasts. We've read articles about you.
Oh, I'm so sorry you had to endure all of that.
I've enjoyed it. I've loved it. We've learned.
But I met you, I saw you, sorry, from at the Future Women's Summit, the Reset Summit, early in the year, and you were up on the panel and you spoke, I think I said, messaged you at the time and I just said you spoke so incredibly well and you were, there's just a noticeable energy where you're willing to go that extra step and be vulnerable, but also share information, which I felt like is this cross combination of very inspiring and very intriguing. And so it's wonderful.
I'll take that. Yeah. Have been called worse things.
Because it's just, I just wonder how on earth you manage to, I mean, you have created so many startups and businesses and sold them and are so established within your career and so successful. And I was like, and you are so put together. And so, and I'm like, how
it's all a facade. Don't let this fool you.
But how does one person do all of that? And so to be able to sit down with you today is a real honour. So,
thank you.
Please share that knowledge so we too can be like you.
Yes, you can tell.
It's all a facade.
Zoe and I are trying to garner this information for ourselves.
Held together with sticky tape and chewing gum. The wheels could fall off at any moment.
That's right. But we always find it fascinating fascinating to go back to the beginning, because that childhood experience, family dynamics, we feel like always are a some way, shape or form shape your trajectory and decision making as an adult. So would you mind taking us back to like who little Taryn was and your family dynamic growing up?
Yeah, totally. And it's so interesting. I've just started learning all about like childhood trauma and like how that shapes people and their reactions to the world. Mm. Only in like the last 2 years, I actually, touch wood, had like a really beautiful childhood. My parents are still married, still happily together. I was born in South Australia in the Barossa Valley. We moved overseas and lived in Fiji when I was about 7, 8, which was amazing, like a really unique and different experience. It was back when there was no TV. Nothing was open on the weekends. We didn't wear shoes to school. Like, it was a really completely unconventional childhood, which was amazing. And I do think that shaped me in a lot of ways. Like, we had to, I guess, learn to be pretty resilient. I was a minority. Like, there was so many ethnically diverse people represented there, which was amazing. But it was very different to be, I guess, in the reverse shoes of being a minority. So, yeah, I think that sort of that shaped me. And then we moved back to far north Queensland, then I lived in Canberra, then Sydney. So I sort of lived all over the place. And my parents, my dad is an environmental engineer. My mum was a stay-at-home mum. I think it probably, I always say I had a bit of an unconventional childhood in that they gave us like a lot of visibility and transparency and responsibility from an early age. Mm. So they, instead of being quite, I guess, dictatorial as parents and saying like, you know, I don't know, you're not allowed to go to this party and, you know, that's it, that's the final rule. They were kind of like, well, look, if you want to go to this party, you can. Here's the impacts of that. Like, you're the one that has to study and pass exams. It's really up to you. You can choose to go. You can go out late if you want. Your mother and I have passed our exams and had our careers. And so really the only person this is going to impact is you. So your choice, you know, we'll support you either way. Which I think could go one of two ways, you know, like
I really like this because I use that too and I'm like, is that wrong?
Yeah.
But I feel like it's good.
Yeah, I mean, it made me, I think I was a pretty, I don't want to say anxious kid. I was very studious. I really wanted to do well at school. I cared a lot about like not letting people down. And I think that probably has carried through into my later life. Yes. Like I wanted to do a really good job at everything and yeah. I wanted to be a really good friend. I wanted to be a good student. I wanted to, you know, do volunteering things. I wanted to, you know, kind of, I guess, try and exceed at everything. My sister, like, you know, no disrespect, we're super different people. She's, you know, has an amazing family. She took a very different path in life and she's, you know, totally awesome in her own way. We're just so different. So it's like, how much of it is nature versus nurture? Because we grew up in the exact same environment, but I've become this, like, I don't know, super headstrong. I was a very stubborn child, my parents will tell you, and, like, had a very clear vision of, like, this is what I'm doing. This is how it will happen. I think you are shaped a lot by those early experiences and, I guess, how your parents parent.
But also kind of, I guess, you know, there is so much resilience there because you are moving around. You're kind of thrown into different schools, different situations, and you have to adapt.
Yeah, definitely. I think learning how to cultivate relationships quite quickly is something I probably didn't reflect on until in my later, even probably like my early 30s. I probably didn't reflect on how much of that came from my early childhood in having to adapt to different scenarios.
And be around all different types of people.
All different types of people. And almost probably to some extent wear a facade some of the times where I actually did my Myers-Briggs test. I don't know if you've ever done one.
Oh, my God.
It's so confronting.
Why is that triggering that word?
My psychologist that I do see regularly is begging me to do it, but it's quite time-consuming, isn't it? It takes like an hour?
No, so you basically do it in – you're supposed to do it in, like, flow state, like not overthink it and just, like, read the question and answer really quickly. And you, from memory, it's like – I can't remember if you – so, like, it's basically multiple choice, so you have to do it very quickly. They don't want you to overthink it. They want you to do, like, your first reaction.
Right.
And I did my Myers-Briggs test, I don't know, 15 years ago maybe. And I had a business coach at the time, and she was like, this is mildly terrifying. You test in the world as such an extrovert because you've been living this way for so long, but you are such an introvert.
Mm.
And so, like, you actually, I think you can adapt and shape some of your core, like I'm definitely the person who wants to go home on a Friday night, read a book, you know, have quiet time, not go out to a bar, not be super social. I value like really close, small interpersonal relationships, like yeah. not big. But I've had to live in the world for so long.
I'm like, where's the problem?
Yeah, that's literally Zoe and I in a nutshell. It's funny because we had the night in Sydney last night, and we just had a really quiet dinner at 5:30.
This is me.
And then we had one glass of wine.
I'm so thrilled.
I know. Yeah. One glass of wine, and then we're in bed by 7:30.
Heaven.
But yes,
we were working in bed. But you're just tired.
Yeah.
But also, the value I'm the same. I would far prefer to have a smaller personal connection with a small group of people rather than extend myself, because also I identify with the facade component a bit, because I know how to be in a room of people, but there is an adrenal fatigue once I leave that room, because I'm like, I just don't actually have it in me to continue that front.
It's not my natural state. Mm. People are always really shocked by that. They're like, oh my gosh, but like you're such an extrovert. And I'm like, nope. Like it really does take its toll. So I think, learning how to adjust
it
and
is
reset.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And also having the awareness to reevaluate those things too. I mean, were you starting to identify that you were, say, becoming adrenally fatigued when you were in work environments and so on, where you were like, I need to work out what's going on here because I just don't.
Yeah, I was really burning the candle at both ends. So I was working really, really hard, like in the boring stuff that no one sees on social media, right? Like you're just in the office, like in back-to-back meetings, or like sitting at your desk, like at your laptop with terrible posture for 8 hours a day, you know.
Pilates.
And, and so there's the, kind of like that part of my life and day job. And then there's the sort of the extended, like the speaking gigs or, events and all of those things as well. And so I was kind of getting to these periods where I was having, 14, 16-hour days and just completely wiped and completely exhausted. And I really had to kind of go through and be pretty brutal with myself about which one of these things were, like, really, really necessary, really, like, genuinely for the business, and which one of them were, like, for ego. Which ones are these things, like, taking on another board role, like, really? Like, is this really just the ego of, like, wanting to be valued, wanting that external validation of someone being like, you're amazing, you should join this board, like. So I think having some of those tough conversations and going, what can I cut back? Because, I've definitely had a couple of periods in my career where I was super burnt out and just like could not do it anymore.
Well, I can only imagine. I feel like there is this obviously a drive and tenacity there, and you clearly have like a hard work ethic ingrained in you. How do you, like, where do you identify that from? Was that something that you witnessed growing up, like, with your family and your mum and the roles that they undertook? Like, where does it come from?
Yeah, my dad definitely would identify as a workaholic, I think. Yeah. But he also really loved his job and he loved his career. And so he definitely instilled in us, like, a really strong work ethic. But also that it was important, like what you did and what you contributed. They were both heavily involved in, like, when they were younger, like Rotary and things like that. So my dad still does. They both volunteer. My dad
like
still
community
does.
Minded.
Yeah, and so they were sort of like, what you do with your life is important, and how you contribute and how you show up. And so I think I sort of extrapolated seeing him work late, work really, really hard. He was always super present for us, like. Never missed a school concert or whatever, but he would work super hard, sit down with us, have dinner with us, help with homework, and then he'd go back into his study and he'd work. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I absorbed that growing up, that working really hard and achieving things and doing things was really important. And also, I guess, trying to do all of the things, like trying to also be there for your family, try to also contribute to the community. Not super realistic, as I've realised.
No, I know.
Can't have it all at
once.
I know.
But yeah, that's it. I think you can, but not all at once.
Totally.
And everything comes at different times.
Yeah. And I think recognizing, look, when I was selling the Right Fit and the Influencers Agency, I had to take a step back and go, like, I have a finite number of hours in the day, and I also have a finite amount of mental capacity. So even if I've got, like, a night where I'm finishing at 7:30 at the office instead of like 10:30, I was so done. And so during that time, I had to just say to a lot of people around me, like, I'm super sorry, for the next like 6 months, this is the most important thing on my plate. And so I'm not going to call, I'm not going to text, I'm not going to be able to make dinners. Like, I love you, I'm thinking of you, but
yeah, but I can't.
I'll see you in 6 months. Like, I just had to be really realistic about taking things off my plate, because I knew I couldn't do it, and I was feeling so overwhelmed, like the weight of responsibility and not wanting to let people down and not wanting to be a terrible friend and all of those things.
Do you feel like there's a lot more relief now that you've sold those businesses?
Yeah, I think there's never a right time to celebrate though. Like, it's like when you raise capital and do you celebrate when you've signed the term sheet, or like when the final shareholders agreement's done, or when the money hits the bank, or like, you know, and then by the time money hits the bank, you're like, shit, now we've actually got to execute what we just raised money for. So it was kind of one of those things of like, I signed the paperwork on the 22nd of December as I'd actually flown from Sydney and I was in transit in Doha, and I signed before I flew and I was waiting for the counter signature, and I was on the plane and I was just like, I hope by the time
do I have a champagne?
Yeah, exactly. And I was by myself as well, and I was like, okay, like, got the countersign part back in Doha, and I was like, cool, I guess, like, there's still, like, you know, a cooling off period, like, you know, when do you actually celebrate? So it kind of felt like, I don't know, not it was a really interesting period. There was definitely like a sense of relief, like, oh my god, thank god, that's, you know, it was done. Such an intense process, like having obviously competing bidders, trying to think about what's right for you personally, but then what's right for the company, what's right for your shareholders. You know, trying to get that balance right was really, really challenging. So, yeah, it was definitely one of the more stressful things that I've ever done.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about everything that you're saying, and if we were to go back to, like, I read that you got scouted for modelling when you were 15.
Yeah, 15, yeah.
And then you started modelling, and then you started the Wink modelling agency. And I think about the tying back to what you were talking about before with your family and your parents, as much as they were hard workers, they did something that they were passionate about and believed in. Was that the founding reason for Wink? Like, your Wink is renowned for equality and paying fair pay for its models and diversity. Was that a driving force, building something that you believe in?
Yeah, I think they had also sort of instilled in us this idea that, not that you could do that, you can do anything, because I think that's a little bit like, you know, clearly there were certain things I was not going to be able to do, right? Like, from a physical capacity perspective. But I think they'd always sort of instilled in us, like, hey, you're safe to go and try things, and it's okay if you fail, like, your mother and I are here to support you, catch you, but like, you got to go out and try. And they'd exposed us to so much from like a media perspective. Like, they would talk to us about, like, you know, politics and international affairs, and really wanted us to have a good sense of the world. And I guess probably trying to develop like a good sense of like morals and values and what was right and wrong. And so I probably charged out into the world like with this like belief that, you know, I can fix anything, and there's like very clear right and wrongs, and people need to do the right thing, and you have to, you know, like make commitments, you honor them. And, you know, then you come to realize, like, as an adult, you just realize the world does not work that way. Like, there is, you know, there's people through whatever reason either have a differing belief of what is right and wrong to you, or that, you know, some people just are A-okay not doing things that are necessarily what you believe is right. And I had to really let go of that sense of, like, because I would get so – it was something I worked a lot with my mentor about, but I was like, but that's not right. Like, you don't – like, I had this such a sense of, like, just. It is just not just.
And oh, my God, it's so weird. Like, I literally –
you've got to let that go.
I feel like both of us, actually. Zoe and I feel like the reason why we even connect as best friends, but we have similar values in that sense of, like, you know – trying to do the right thing, trying to be community-minded, trying to be – and it's funny, I still get jarred for the same reason, that every time that's a circumstance like that happens, we're like, how can that person think that that's
– okay, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's alarming.
Yeah. And, like, not letting it make you bitter either. Yes. Like, I don't want to go around in the world being like, oh, well, I'll just also be a horrible person. Or, you know, like, holding on to that.
Well, but and also, I think if you live by your values, you do – like, that makes you who you are and a better person.
I think it helps identify what opportunities are right for you.
Yes.
And I do think it took me a long time to sort of realize that. And you would look at things and you'd be like, is there a really strong true values alignment here? Like, is this something that I'm taking for the wrong reason or a superficial reason? And because then I think you find out very quickly, like, those values become really jarring. So, you know, whether it's a job role or a partnership or, you know, a relationship or a friendship or whatever, there's only it does become very jarring very quickly, I think.
Gosh, it's hard, isn't it? But I do also think, thank goodness, you know, there are people in the world such as yourself that have that sense and are in within the business world, because otherwise it will become too outweighed, you know, like you've got to have the good people in there with the good intentions as much as the people in there that are in it for the economical
e-commerce. But do you believe that your set of values are similar to your businesses, or are they slightly different?
Yeah, I think there's sort of like a trickle-down effect. So, like, I think that things like innovation are really important to me, and like constant learning and growth and evolution. And I think that shows up in my businesses. Yeah. I think, trying to do the right thing and being sort of celebratory in my approach to the world, and then therefore our business's approach to the world. So I think there's some common DNA threads between all of my businesses in how they operate. And I think it takes time to learn as well, to like step away from things where, you know, especially if you've got a client that's like a really well-paying client or whatever, and there's a massive cultures misalignment, and it took me a long time to sort of go, you know, sometimes you just got to let things go. You got to like fire a client. Or
what's it called? Cut them from the herd.
I like this. Yeah.
Like, they've just got to be cut.
They got to go. Yeah.
They've got to go.
I would be so bad at that.
You're going to be cut.
Hopeless.
Yeah, but I feel like it's something you learn. Yeah. It's something you learn as you get older, to just be a little bit more cutthroat.
Yeah. Stick to that sort of core beliefs, and I think those people, I think it helps people self-identify too, if like, especially employees, like you can see so easily, it helps them go, yeah, you know what, this is not going to be the place for me, you know. I think
totally. I again, thinking about what we're talking about, around the time you started Wink Models, you got married really young and you got divorced. I mean, that is, I can't even imagine at that age having the know-how or even the maturity to do
clearly
both of those two things.
It's a lot, Nia. It's a lot. But was that like a school relationship?
No. It was someone that I met when, I was 19, maybe 18, 19, 20, 21, somewhere in there. No, it was ridiculous. Like, I honestly don't know what I was thinking. But I think I had been so headstrong my entire life that I was like, you know, I'm going to achieve all of these things. I'm going to, you know, run businesses. I'm going to, you know, I don't know, whatever. And so it was just kind of the next natural, you know, I think we'd been together about 2.5 years, and he was like, we should get married. And I was like, yes, this is all on the plan of like, you know.
The trajectory.
Yeah, exactly. So it was just wild, you know. I think it was the best thing for me. It was the first time I'd like really skinned my knees. Like, until then, not that like life had been super easy, but like I hadn't had any massive, really painful situations that I couldn't solve. And this was one of those ones where it was like, oh, this is kind of blindsiding, and like, okay, I'm really going to have to learn some uncomfortable, I guess, to be able to sit in that discomfort, and also like have to reflect on what parts of this were mine to own. Like, what did I do in that situation? What could I be doing better? And also like, what drove me to like want to get married so young? Like, why did I just go, okay, yes, like, I don't know, like, this is the narrative, this is the path we're supposed to go, I guess I'll get married. Like, it was just, yeah, it was a lot of, I guess, doing what society had thought or expected, as opposed to like really putting any deep thought into.
Yes. But, and I mean, first relationships and relationships when they end, it's painful.
Yeah.
But it's such a growth experience. But that, I can only imagine getting divorced at that age would have been, like, that's different to just breaking up with someone.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That would have totally been another point in your life where I'm sure that shaped you.
Yeah, and I look back, like, I've had so many more formative – sometimes I forget that I was married, like, because it was so long ago. And, I think about some of the more formative relationships I've had since then that really, like, where the breakup really hurt, or where, like, you really learned something about yourself, or you're like, oh, I really sucked at that one. Definitely it was such a painful experience. And I think it was probably, like, as much as it was, like, a public – failing. It was the first time I'd had to really, I guess, go back to people in my social network, or people would be like, oh my God, I saw you got married. And you're like, divorced.
Actually
on that note. Yeah, exactly. So there was kind of like this real, it was humbling. And I think I really needed that because I'd been so sort of, I don't know, gung-ho, God, you know, really focused on achieving all these things, I probably needed like a bit of a healthy dose in humility. But yeah, it was super hard, and like it was a really messy split, and like all of these things. I obviously didn't have any friends who were getting divorced at that age, right? So it was also like, geez.
Yeah, that's
like,
hard.
It was the real first rodeo. Like it was really learning about like, holy shit, like this stuff gets real
messy. Did you have a big wedding as well?
We did have a pretty big, we got married in France, in the south of France. So we'd have
sounds quite gorgeous.
60 yeah. people fly over and, you know, attend. So it was like a, yeah, pretty intense wedding. So, yeah.
Wow. It sounds like a beautiful, would have been a beautiful.
Every year, everyone thinks this is hilarious. Every year on Instagram, I post some of like the, I used to have long hair. No, not when I got married, but I used to have long hair when I for a period of when I was modeling as well. And I roll out on Instagram stories like some of the most hilarious, worst pictures and like these chapters that people are like, oh my God. And there's this series from my wedding and people are like,
I need to look at it.
What?
Now.
Oh, they're so hilarious. They're so hilarious.
It is it is painful, but I guess it is such a big part of who you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do, you learn so much.
Totally. I wouldn't take it back. Like it,
yes.
It was a sucky, tough thing to learn, but it shaped so much of who I am now that I'm like, had to go
and
it
changes
clearly.
The way you go into your next relationships and 100%. What you want, because how do you know what's good and bad in a relationship until you've had it?
We chatted on the phone very briefly, but about you mentioned to me about the fact that you realised maybe at that point that relationships are not a known outcome.
Yep.
Whereas business has a lot more of a controllable outcome.
Yeah.
Do you think that the whether it be that particular relationship and divorce or around that period, did that push you more in the direction of I'm going to throw myself into business because this is something I can do and control, so
I
to speak?
I definitely don't think I had that self-awareness at the time to realise that that was what I was doing, but it was absolutely what I was doing. Like there's one of the best things about having a business during that time was like you just had to fucking get up and keep going. Like you didn't have a choice. Like,
well, and you were
like
probably
you
employing people. You've got all these people that are, you know, counting on you
relying.
To show
you
up.
You can't just be like, oh, you know,
sorry,
I'm taking a month off.
Not getting out of bed
today. You stay under my doona and have a big pity party. Like you just had to get up and keep going. And so it was like a godsend in so many ways, but it also definitely pushed me into this, you know, space of being like, I'm really, really good at work. And I can just throw myself 110% into that. I can execute really well. And the outcomes are pretty controllable. Like the harder you work, the more you work. I mean, sure, there's times where that isn't always the case. You get a, you know, financial crisis or whatever. But pretty much you can control the outcomes. Mm. And so I was like, yes, great. I'm going to do all of these things. Mm. And even after my poor mentor, even after I sold The Right Fit, he was like, I need you to promise me you're not going to do that same behavior pattern where you like, I know what you do. Like instead of sitting with the discomfort of being like, great, I'm going to take some time off and I'm going to like do some self-reflection. Like don't throw yourself into another project. And I was like, I threw myself into another project. Like, and I was,
happened. And you know, people
that was
probably
my justification.
Come
I was like, I didn't mean to,
ideas.
But it was this, you know, and then here we are. Yeah. So
it's tricky. And you don't want to say no to opportunities that you're passionate about either.
Yeah, I've said I need to put myself in a sin bin. I'm okay if I go overseas. So if I'm away, then you don't have this opportunity. Like people are a little bit more respectful. They're like, cool, call me when you're back from wherever. Whereas if you're here, people are like, can you speak at this conference? Or like, you know, can you join this board? Or hey, can I? And I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. Yes, I do. Oh, that's a great idea. Oh, if I just put that person and these resources to that, I could make a really cool business around that.
Yes.
So I just need to be in a sin bin overseas for a little while.
In a sin bin.
Yeah. I don't have any self-control, so.
But that's the thing. I mean, it's just I can totally – I am in awe of the fact that you can see those things and that you have the ability. I think a lot of people can have visions, but to be able to execute them is a totally different kettle of fish.
Successfully.
Yeah, successfully.
Some more than others, you know.
But I think about how, like – That is so much. I mean, because you did Wink and are still a part of Wink yep. Agency. And then you built and founded and sold The Right Fit and the Influencer Agency. Mm-hmm. And I think throughout all of it, plus, like, as you said, all the other things that you were juggling, like being on boards and being speaker and I wonder, like, where is the time for Taryn in all of that? And what is the
$1 million question.
Do you have friends?
Do you leave the house?
Do you have a dog? Yeah. But I guess not everyone wants that either.
It's really, I have a really tight group of friends who are phenomenal and have, you know, been friends for quite a long time. And so they sort of know this, you know, that when I'm there, I'm all in, like I'm 100% present when I'm with people. Like I'm not on my phone. I'm not doing 8 other things. Like if I'm there, I'm there and I'm 100% in. It's just that the being there is probably not as frequent as, you know, maybe it ideally should be. So,
and are they in a similar industry? Like, are they all creatives that?
No, it's a really diverse sort of. They're all in pretty, I guess, similar commercial situations in the sense that they work very, very hard. They have very demanding careers, but they do them because they enjoy them and they love them and they're very, very good at what they do. And yes. So, we all have a, some amount of flexibility in what we can do in terms of, like, you know, we travel a lot, so, you know, we could take time off and go overseas or whatever. But with the understanding that the only person that is penalising is ourselves. Like, we're in the sense that, you know, we're either self-employed or in career. Like, you know, some are barristers and things like that. So, like, if you're not here, you're not working, you're not getting paid. So, yes. Yeah, they're sort of in similar sort of spaces like that. So There's parts that, you know, I carve out time for exercise. There's certain things that are like non-negotiables for me that I make time for.
Yeah.
And, you know, really close, deep friendships. And then kind of I'm just very bad at all of the other stuff. Like I just have thousands of unread WhatsApps that I just like.
Yeah, WhatsApp, you know, haunts me at night.
The guilt that, like, I was explaining to a friend how terrible I am at this, and she'd sent me an app that you can download that can schedule WhatsApp messages. And I was like, oh, this could be a godsend.
Oh.
You know, but I hope my mum's not listening to this. But I was like, fantastic. I can just auto-schedule, like, just checking in. Like, hey, listen to this podcast. Thought you might enjoy it.
Oh,
or like,
that's clever. I
wonder if you could do that for school, though. Like, you could just, like, write all this random stuff for school WhatsApps just so people think you're actually
active,
present,
Mentally.
You're mentally That's checked it. Out.
Exactly. I actually care. No.
Yeah, exactly. So. Oh,
gosh. With that being said, what's like a practical, because you're so put together, you look so collected and calm, and I'm just sort of like, I feel like there's obviously a balance there that you're juggling and you're doing well. And so is it, on a practical sense, is it like you make sure that you exercise and you meet the appointments you want to make that make you feel good?
I think there's only ever two states of Taryn. Like there's like put together and people are like, oh, you always look so nice and you're so well groomed. Or there's like the epic disheveled Taryn, which is like, you know, the 80% of the time where it's like me in my Qantas pajamas working from home or like living in activewear, like hair a mess, like chaos. So it's definitely not the usual state. I think that there is like this common misconception that, you know, what you see on social is like the always picture.
What you are every day.
Yeah. Yes. And I do feel like I should maybe share more of that so people are like, oh, cool. Like this is normal. The other part is the 80%, not the 20% that you see where it like seems like I've got it all together.
But there is that sense of routine. And if you feel like you look good and you're exercising, you're eating well, you're sleeping, like that's, you're going to get the best out of yourself.
Yeah. I don't nail any of those things, I don't think. So I do, exercise is the one thing that like, I think I'm like, there's very little in my life that I really get control over. And probably being a bit of a control freak, I like to like, I can schedule my Pilates classes and my yoga classes and my spin and I'm like, good. There's like 6 hours of my week or whatever that like is locked and loaded. I know exactly how it's going to unfold. And no one can disturb me, you know, I don't have my phone on or whatever. So, and I always exercise in the morning because after that it's like the chaos. Anything can happen.
Literally,
it's a wild ride. Every day is different. So I definitely like really carve out time for that, and it's a non-negotiable. And I make sure that it's always going to happen. Everything else, like my poor hairdresser is always like, I cannot stand seeing your hair like that. I've seen it. So get to the hairdresser. And he will like,
what a good friend.
Message me and be like, I have booked you in on Thursday. You need to come. And I was like, okay. So
there's okay. Definitely. He's good. He's good.
Yeah. They're amazing. So there's definitely things like that I'm like, wow. And I always say it's like life admin that stresses me. Like if anything that I can outsource, I outsource. I get food delivered, cleaner, dry cleaning. Like I just don't value it. I don't. Think it's personally I don't think it's important.
Well, your time is better spent elsewhere, whether or not it's reconnecting with friends and that you don't get to see very often, or throwing yourself into business to generate the business and the outcome. I can understand that you got to delegate those
sense.
Things.
Yeah, complete sense.
Yeah. And yeah. Going to what you just said earlier reminds me of we were talking about social media and how sometimes people present a bit of a facade.
It's so bad.
And I wondered about how you feel, because at the Future Women's Reset Summit, you very vulnerably shared about, it was a fashion panel and we're talking about women and fashion industry. And you were talking about how you started out modelling and you have Wink, which is a modelling agency, but then you referred to the fact that you weren't quite sure about where you're at in your life and who, say, you dress for or present for. Is it for others or is it for yourself? And I found that question that you asked yourself on stage fascinating, because it was sort of opened up a window of conversation about the fact that, as we get older and we're going through the same process as you, because we're actually all the same age.
Young.
exactly.
Youthful. Where are you going with this question?
Yeah, but exactly the point that we're grappling with, where to from here type. Like, do you find your experience growing up modelling and then having a modelling agency, has that affected the lens in which you see yourself and life?
Yeah, and I think all of these key learnings for me have only happened in like the last 5 years, where I've become so much more self-aware. And I think it's from having external like psychologists or great mentors or people who would be like, maybe you should pull this thread. Like what's driving the behavior underneath this? And so my mentor had actually said to me, like, you always look so put together. And like, I would show up to a board meeting, for example, like everyone else in like sneakers and jeans or whatever, in heels and a suit, and I'd make an effort or, well-styled. And he was like, where does that come from? What's that? Because it's clearly something for you. Like, we're not expecting that of you.
But it would make you present well, wouldn't it? Yeah. I don't know. It makes me mentally and physically want to kind of go into that meeting with more drive.
Yeah. So there's partly like a, I feel it's respectful. Like, yes. I'm showing respect to the people that I'm meeting with or whatever. There's partly obviously something else underneath that though, like of, do I feel that I need to be presented this way to be valued, or like, are looks important in commercial success? Like, or how much of my commercial success is also tied to how I look and how I present? And
do you work with a lot of males? Like, are you often the only female?
Yeah, so the creative, Wink is like predominantly in the creative industries. So most of our clients are females, marketing managers, brand directors, producers and things like that. Actually, it's probably like 60-40, skewed towards women.
Yep.
And so it wasn't until I moved into tech with The Right Fit and now Hash Gifted that it's the opposite. Like, and obviously, like, venture capital, raising money, all of those things are like heavily male skewed. And then the technology industry and startups, very heavily male skewed. And so I really hadn't had that reflection of, I guess, how I showed up commercially in a male dominated industry until I went into that space.
And in a power suit.
Yeah. And I just had some basic rules. Like, I would always wear heel. I mean, post-COVID less so, but like, I had these basic rules of like life that I was like, must do these things. But clearly there's something behind that And I think social media has more and more shaped that in, like, the expectations we put on ourselves to look a particular way, or always, like, you know, be nicely styled, or always have these, you know, the coolest outfits, or it can't be healthy.
But I do think that there's nothing wrong with putting in effort for work. Like, yes. I actually enjoy it. I just think I was always taught, and I do teach my girls that too, it's not a bad thing to make an effort.
Yeah.
Like, brush your hair, do your teeth, pop on a nice outfit if you're going out, or, you know, if I'm going to work or meeting clients, or it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there is that sense of respect too.
Yes. I think there's a difference, though, between, for example, the presenting to, say you're in the tech industry like Taryn, and presenting to a room of majority men. Yes. I find, as sad as it is to say, if you want to command
respect and attention.
Yes, you present in a way in which it does that. I feel like for me particularly, I've noticed I was in film and TV industry as a producer, then I became a homemaker and have been at home with my kids, and the difference being quite often I don't bother, you know, like presenting very well because I'm with the kids.
Yeah.
But I find that if I was to, say, drop the kids to school and then I have to go to a meeting for something, and it's not, you know, I don't have to present in a suit, I can come as I am. The difference of the demeanour of what you get from people is extremely noticeable.
Yes.
But at the same time, I think about the correlation down to social media and the presence that constant presence of presenting in a way in which is appealing and aspirational and stuff can be quite exhaustive and sort of not healthy for any of us, really. But then no one's going to be, you know, posting.
And how much of it is for me versus, like, the male gaze? Like, do I wear these clothes because they're what I like, or because they are, you know, I guess what we would say a traditional male lens of beauty is? Mm. Like, I think my style's definitely changed so much over the last, like, 5 years, you know. But I think there was a big part of me that was like, I remember saying to someone once, like, if you're raising capital, you always wear a skirt. Like, if you're a female founder, like, it was kind of like the 50s again in my world. I was like,
and you pop on a heel and a red lip.
Exactly. You know, and I was like,
it's crazy, but it's true.
It does make you fill a space. Like, if you're wearing a heel, you've got, that's why the power suits of the 80s, they had shoulder pads, because it filled up space.
Yeah.
In a male dominated industry.
Mm. Yeah, it's really fascinating to try and understand it and wrap our heads around it. But I know, like, you say your mentor, you often talk about that relationship. Is that, where did that start? And like, how did that back and forth generate of them guiding you?
Is it one person or is it a few?
Yeah, I currently have one, and I've had various people over different chapters of my career, usually like one very close person for, you know, a particular chunk of time, and then as, like, your lives change or you move into different, you know, career, I've had different businesses, so different people for different businesses. Usually it starts by someone that I've met organically through a business meeting or an event or something, and I'm like, oh, that was really interesting. I got a lot from that conversation, and I'm like a big stalker. I'll hit them up on LinkedIn or whatever. I'm like, can we have a coffee? I always would come armed. I probably didn't realize this, but I talk a lot about it when people come to me saying, like, you know, how do I get a mentor? Or I would always come armed with a very specific problem. I wouldn't be like, hey, I want to start a tech company. Like, what do I do? I would be like, I need to build a payment gateway. I've looked at these different four types of payment gateways. I know that you run a company that has a payment gateway. You're a CIO or a CTO. I've got it down to these four. Can you explain to me why you chose that one that you use? What are the differences? What should I be aware of? Like, can we have a coffee and talk about it? So they, I guess, I was respectful of their time and energy.
Mm, yes.
And I came with a very, and that they would give me a whole bunch of advice on, you know, all sorts of other things. And I would follow up and I'd come back and I'd say, you know, you recommended I do these four things. I've done these four things. You know, I'm stuck on 0.5. Can we have another coffee, you know, and go through 0.5, for example. And so I think people are really willing to help others if they show that you take it seriously and that you execute what they've recommended.
Yes.
And
Which is important, I believe.
Yes, yes, yeah. Actually. Like, and it doesn't necessarily, you know, sometimes they're like, oh, you should do this thing. And you're like, I fundamentally disagree with that. You shouldn't take their advice blindly. But
yeah,
like
yeah.
being able to go like, look, I looked into it and here's why I don't think it works, you know, for my particular use case or business or whatever. But I think taking their advice seriously and like, you know, executing, feeding back, keeping them in the loop. So I always did that with my mentors. And I would always try and make it mutually beneficial. So I would always, like, I didn't, there was not like a payment situation, but I would always try and either bring information to them that was useful for their careers, you know, whether it was a contact or something that they might not be across that I had got access to through one of my businesses or even like generationally something that I was seeing that might be important for them. Mm-hmm. And I would always be super respectful of their time and like, you know, never cancel, show up early, all of those kind of like basics.
Which you think are normal skills in life, but they're not.
No, they're not.
No,
they're
and it's
common sense, not so common.
Yes, yeah. That's right, isn't it? And as someone has often, someone said to me before that if you expect someone to sit down with you and offer, time is really the most valuable thing that we have.
Yeah.
So if you expect someone to sit down with you and offer their time, you show them your appreciation of it, but also like, researching what you need to do and downsizing what you the requirements or the inquiries so that you are valuing their time.
Yeah,
is like an integral part of it, and you would think common sense, but it's yeah. A lot of people think that just sitting down and having a coffee is shooting the breeze, but no one really has the time.
You can't change people's lives.
Yeah,
so like you can't come to me with problems about your life. Like I actually can't.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fix that for you.
Yeah. So you need to know with a clear direction what you're trying to retrieve and gain from.
100%.
Yeah.
So from there, I mean, you sold your last two businesses and you have thrown yourself into Hash Gifted, yes. Which is a content and brand, like it's streamlining the relationships between content and brands.
Yes. So it connects influencers and content creators with brands and PR agencies purely for product seeding and contra gifting. So instead of brands just sending things out unsolicited, influencers actually get to opt in and say, actually, yes, I would like to try that new makeup collection or that new, and here's what I'm willing to do in exchange, you know, whether it's some UGC.
So then can they track the conversion?
Yeah, so we capture all of the content that a creator posts about that brand if they're booked through Hash Gifted. It also has a Shopify integration, so if you're a brand, you can just like, here's all the stuff we're willing to gift. Once you pick someone, they can automatically decrement an order through Shopify. So like just streamlining all of that
And no wastage.
No wastage. Because I would get sent so much unsolicited stuff because PR agencies or brands had my address. And I'd feel so awful because I'd be like, oh, I actually have like a brand endorsement deal with a skincare company, so I can't promote this product. Or like, this actually isn't my size. Or like, lovely but not my colour. Like, I'm not going to wear that. And so... but then on the flip side, there was times where I would be sliding into a brand's DMs being like, hey, I'm going to be in Brisbane. Can I have like a night's free hotel stay in exchange for like posting about you? And like the whole thing was just ick for both sides, right? Like brands like also doing the same. Like, hey, can we like gift you some stuff? And influencers being like, no, I charge like $10,000. And, you know, the whole thing was just awkward. So I wanted to streamline that. For influencers, it's like a dating app. So they just like swipe left and right through what they want to receive.
I want to be an influencer.
Do you really? Like,
no,
it's a hard job. Like really good ones, they really put their back into it.
We would be so far out of our depth. In fact, everything that you're saying is just a whole new world I would never have even known of. And it's so fascinating because it is so the world today. So it's so interesting that something like this is only coming about now through your engineering of it. But it is like you think about the amount of stuff that must go out that just, you know, gets wasted.
Yeah. Because I always say like the old school sampling was like, you know, the Red Bull girls handing out cans at like train stations, right? Like
I feel like I did that as a joke.
I think everyone had a face.
That was possibly me.
And whereas now, like the town hall is social media, right? Like that's where people go to get their information and like try products and get recommended things. And like I'm the biggest sucker for this. You know, people are like this eye cream. I'm like definitely going to try that. Or like you know, so brands need to be in that space and they want to get people out there talking about their product, trying it. You know, genuinely creating content that like you know, and it's not about it always being like, this was the best thing ever. Like, I tried this hair moisturizer. It's like, hey, I tried this. I didn't like the packaging, but I really, that's so valuable for a consumer to go, okay, this person has the same hair type as me or whatever. They didn't like this, but they like that. I'm going to give it a try. So creating that at scale is so hard for a brand if, you know, if you're doing it like manually, like trying to identify people who might like want to try your product. Mm. Or
but so you've set this up in Australia. Will you roll it out in other countries?
Yeah, so we're just over 6 months old. So I actually had a co-founder in this business who, so I had come up with the idea while I was still at TRF. And so I was like, look, I'll build a little tiger team. You guys work on this idea I've got. This is how I think it could work, blah, blah, blah. And then I was obviously still heavily in TRF and we were going into the sale process and it kind of grew into sort of a life of its own. And I was like, cool. I put in my head of product. I was like, I will give you equity in this business, but you've got to run it. Like, I don't have time and I'm taking a 12-month sabbatical after I sell. Like, this is the role. I need time off. I promised myself and I'm going to take this time off.
I feel like and this is...
It does not end well, this story. So we were about, I don't know, maybe the business was live for like a month, 6 weeks, something like that. And my co-founder was like, yeah, I can't do this. Like, I'm out. It's too hard, too stressful. Like, it's just too much. Like, sorry.
Essentially.
And I was like, no. I'm on sabbatical. I am like, so I had to come back. I was actually overseas. I came back to Australia. Had to like go through that process. So it was navigate the situation with him and restructure the business and come back and run it. We've actually just hired a CEO this week. So like, great.
Okay, that's good. So when does the sabbatical start?
So technically I finish on the 25th of June in this business. So I will then just sit on the board, obviously like be around, be an advisor, but not actively day-to-day in the, but very much like I am with Wink, like I'm the sole owner of that business, but I don't play a day-to-day role in the business. And
yeah.
I always joke that like people only come to me when something's really broken, you know, now like, so it's like, I don't get to go to all the fun parties. Like I don't get invited to those. I just get the bad stuff. So
fix the problems.
Yeah, I'll sit on the board. I'll still be involved, but like there's a great team in Hash Gifted. They sort of execute the magic and we'll have a CEO who sort of runs.
Brilliant.
That,
so, yeah. Meanwhile, in the background to all of that, you've got a personal life and we
do I? Is there time?
And you very kindly shared with me though that you had a long distance relationship.
Yeah.
And also started the, you've shared on social media but also in interviews and so on, you've been through the egg freezing process. I mean, that is a lot.
Yeah, I don't make life easy for myself, that's for sure. I could have just dated some really nice guy that lived in Double Bay. Like, no, I'll pick the hardest relationship I can find on the other side of the world.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's so what, do you mind like sharing a bit more about that? Zoe and I, sort of sad to say, we're naive to the whole egg freezing process. Yeah. And
so was I.
And it must be incredibly physically and emotionally challenging.
It was really interesting. So no one talked about it. It's like just starting to become something I think people talk about a little bit more. But, yeah, no one talked about this. Like certainly in my – I'm 38. Certainly in my early 30s or late 20s, no one was like, hi, by the way, like this is how – this is super embarrassing. I didn't even really realize the stats of like how hard it is to fall pregnant.
Never looked into it.
Yeah, when I went to my specialist for the first time, he was like, oh no, there's like literally like 1 or 2 days a month you can possibly fall pregnant and the odds are like super, super low. Like I was like, oh God, we spent all of our lives trying not to get pregnant. Yeah, like
being told what? That like you look at a boy and you get pregnant.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, okay, right, got it. You know, and that, you know, your fertility drops off at a particular point, all these things, like just all of these things I feel like I did not learn in school or in my 20s that I feel like were basic things I probably should have understood. So, yeah, so I remember actually having my doctor when I was 30 was like, so you're like getting a bit older, like you should probably have a baby. And I was like, okay, can we reflect on like why I usually come to see you? It's either because like I'm getting some sort of anti-anxiety medication or I'm getting some like rogue injection to go to some third world country. Like, you know, I'm getting like my yellow fever shot or whatever. I'm like, do you really think like that is good advice? Like, no, like I cannot.
You should really have a baby.
Yeah. And I was like, just shows how broken the medical system was. I was like, okay. And it wasn't until, I was probably, I have an amazing naturopath and she was like, look, what are your plans? Like, and I was like, I don't know. I just guess kind of thought life would sort itself out and I would get married and have a child. So. I don't know. And she was like, yeah, well, you really need to start thinking about that. I was like, okay. So I went and had my AHM levels tested to figure out like where you are at in like how many eggs you've got left and what, you know, what your chances are. And then I did some egg freeze. I did one round of egg freezing after that. And I was super lucky that I didn't have really any like bad side effects. I sort of breezed through my first cycle of, yes, you have to inject every day, but I already take a whole bunch of peptides and supplements and stuff. So I was like, oh, whatever, another needle. So I was like kind of fine with that. And I didn't like have any hormonal changes, like sleep changes. Look, a lot of people have really bad side effects. So I was really, really fortunate with my first cycle. And they, it was like day eight and they were like, great, cool, you need to come in and it's time to for us to harvest these little things inside you. And I was like, gross. But
Okay.
And so they
put you under for that.
Yeah, well, you have two options. You can either be awake with the green whistle, like the morphine thing. Wow. If you've ever had a bad accident, like the morphine whistle that you get to suck on, which is like kind of fun.
Sounds quite nice.
Yeah, or you can be asleep. Yeah, exactly. I was like, can I just have a few of these?
Can I just go home?
Or you can be asleep. I was like, I've got no desire to be awake and see this. Like, why would I want to? No. Some people want to see because you can see them on the screens and they're like, oh, see, there's one. We've got a little, you know, so you can, if you want to like, play by play, like I was like, no thanks, I'm happy to have a nap, I'm tired anyway, so like great, a forced you know hour
I
nap.
Love a small anesthetic.
Oh, me too, just a little light
no
dosage.
One can call me
correct. I was uncontactable. Like, I'm in the hospital, exactly, can't help today. So and then I did a second round about 4 months ago, something like that. Different meds, same doctor, different meds. Mm. Definitely felt the side effects more that time, whether it's just that I'm older or whether it was just different meds or not sure, but I was definitely just more tired. And I have an amazing acupuncturist as well. I sound like I've got this Rolodex of like, I need a big support network. And she was like, you have to remember that your body is like basically forcing out to make all of these eggs. It's like super unnatural. It takes a whole bunch of energy to do that, like emotional, physical, like, you know, you're stimulating something that your body is not naturally designed to do. So I was like, okay, yeah, I guess that makes sense. So and then, you know, coming off the hormones, you have to really like try and rebalance and get all, because it's intense.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. But I now am like the biggest proponent for egg freezing, and I like nag all of my young staff who are like 26. They're like, I've got years. And I'm like, yes, but just do it now. Put them in the bank. Like you just don't.
Just personal question. Is it expensive or is it covered?
Yes, it is. If you've got some like, I'm going to say genetic defect, but I don't think that's right word. But like some reason, then you can claim, I think it's like half of it or something on Medicare. I want to say I'm really bad with these things, but it's probably like 13, 14, 15 grand, somewhere in there, like 10 to 15 from memory.
Yes.
But you do get a chunk back on Medicare if you have to, or if you need it for medical reasons. And I would just, I know it's a big chunky expense for most people. I would 100% recommend it. Like just, I wish I'd just done it when I was like 26. Then you've got like young spring chicken eggs in the bank. And like, you just don't have to think about it. Then it's done. And then whereas I was like, oh God, even the last 2 years, I was traveling so much. I was selling company. And I was like, oh, I need to be in Australia for a consistent period of time because you've got to go for all your tests and whatever. And it has to be done around certain days of your cycle. And I was like, oh, this is a nightmare. Like, you know, it was really something that I had to put a lot of effort and energy into thinking about. Whereas I wish I just banked it when I was... Yeah.
Well, we never get told about these things.
No, we don't.
And you don't think about it because you're in the throes of life.
Yeah, yeah.
You're young. You're like...
Exactly. So now it's like old people like me who are like, you must do this, get it out of the way, you know, just...
I know, but it's like such a hindsight thing. But at the same time, yeah, Zoe said, like, you know, if you keep going through and meeting all those challenges you set for yourself in your working career... Mm. I can imagine it's just really hard to forecast and see the personal milestones that you're not measuring or not checking in on.
And I think you always just presume you're going to meet someone, possibly get married and have a baby. Because
that's
what we were brought up with.
Yeah.
The Disney fairy tale that doesn't exist.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, happy ending that you actually have to create yourself and work hard to get.
Cultivate.
Totally. And so, that it could be like so different to what you expected it to be. Like I've got so many friends. I've got one friend who's had a baby solo. I've got so many friends who are divorced but have amazing co-parenting relationships. You know, there's just so many iterations of what it could look like.
These days, I know. So what does then, knowing that you do and you're plotting and planning for a sabbatical for some time, what does that look like to you?
God. It's a million-dollar question. I've got the first 6 weeks planned.
Yes.
So I'm going to go overseas. I've actually got a friend's birthday in Italy. So I've got about 6 weeks planned, mainly Europe. I'm going to go to Saudi Arabia. And then I don't know. After that, I actually just haven't booked a return flight. So,
good. Oh, wow.
Yeah. TBC. I think I know when I'm here, I obviously have to flex the muscle of like self-control, which haven't exercised yet. So I need to figure out how I'm going to do that for coming back and having like a more measured life of reality of like not working 14-hour days. And I'm also very mindful, like I've said to our board, like I don't want to get under the feet of the new CEO, right? Like I need to give them time to do their thing and find their way. So me coming back and being like, don't do that. That is not very helpful. So, yeah, I don't know. I will, yeah, I have a bunch of boards that I can obviously do from wherever. I can technically run my companies from wherever. I don't know.
Oh, and you can just, but having no set plan
is terrifying for someone who's a control freak.
Yeah. Yes, but you do have rough, you know, guidelines there. So you can kind of build on that.
Yeah.
But also I just think that I feel like the next challenge for you is like you have accomplished so much, like you are so deserving of having that chapter where it is unknown and you do get to test yourself in new ways that you haven't done before because you're focusing on you.
That's the scary stuff though. Like that's the, you know, sitting with discomfort of like, why am I maybe not great at like, you know, these areas of my life instead of just being like, I'll focus on stuff I'm really good at.
See, it's so funny. I that's the stuff that I love. I feel like it's so helpful to
you
know
love
that.
I love that. I hate that unpacking that stuff. I
whereas
just want to keep
the
it
executing
life. Keep squishing it right on down, right on down.
No, I'm constantly unpacking and I'm never executing life very well. Can't have
I
it
don't
all.
Believe that.
But we always ask a bit of a, I guess it's a hindsight question of something that you would go back and sort of nurture to your younger self when you were entering a point in your life where you were doing your career and your personal.
Yeah.
Like, do you have something back that you sort of often reflect upon and go, outside of, I mean, I know we've touched the on the
egg freezing
starting that process earlier, that you would go back and tell your younger self that you've learnt or that stands out as like just you've got this, you're going to be okay?
Yeah, I think probably I was so brutal is probably the best word, like brutally focused on work and commercial success that everything else had to come very far second or third. And that I really didn't give, you know, there's chapters of my life where I feel like awful about some of the people that, for some of the people that were around me at those times, because like there was just no space for anything else or anyone else, which are like, what isn't super nice, obviously, to be on the receiving end if you're one of those people. So I think if I had my time again or if I could give some advice to that younger me, it would be that you're still going to get there, like the, you know, that maybe that extra 2 hours in the office or, you know, cancelling another date night or cancelling another friend's birthday dinner isn't going to make the huge difference
in the long run.
In the long run. And that if you just enjoy the journey a little bit more, you know, I think the whole process can be easier and better. You don't have to be such a martyr. Like I was like, I've got to just do this. I've got to do it all on my own. I can't delegate or it's my responsibility to get all of this done. I think it could have just been a more enjoyable journey. And I think I probably still would have got there. Like, you know, maybe it would have taken slightly longer or maybe it wouldn't have been like, but yeah.
I think that's incredibly helpful to anyone listening. And I think also, I mean, you are still so young and you are about to enter such an amazing next chapter that knowing that now is only going to put you in great stead for this sabbatical.
The sabbatical. I just want to go on the sabbatical, but I haven't really done the work.
It's easy to say it. It's hard to execute it.
Yes.
Like it's easy to say. Oh, now that you've got
this
great
space.
Epiphanies, you know, you're going to do it. Yeah, we'll see.
Thank you, Taryn. That was wonderful.
Thank you for having me. I so enjoyed that.
Oh, we loved
awesome.
It. So grateful and good luck for everything to come. We know we can't wait to watch and see what happens next.
I want to dig in the wedding photos.
Waiting.
I really want to go.
Oh. Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Not Super Woman. You can find extra resources, links and information on our website, which is notsuper-woman.com.
Is that a dash or a hyphen?
A dash is a hyphen, Rash.
Wonderful.
And if you're enjoying what we're bringing, you can follow us on our socials, and we're across all podcast platforms. So hit subscribe, guys.